Good morning. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz and KSQT Prunedale, streaming live at ksqd.org. It is 9:01 and 30 seconds in the morning on Saturday. This is your Saturday Morning Garden Show. I'm Stephen E. Pop, and I'm here in our studio with the one and only Joseph the Roma Truscott. Good morning, Joe.
Well. Thank you for that.
You betcha.
And so we want to make sure that you get out and you shop those farmers markets, folks.
That's right.
Because they're full of produce. There's a bumper crop this year of lots of different things.
Truly.
And please, shop the farmers markets and harvest your own stuff.
That's right. Grow organic, buy organic, and buy local. Be a locavore.
Yeah. And I hope you've had some great success this season with what's in your garden, both horticultural stuff and agricultural things.
Which is a nice little segue into where today's show's going to go, because lots of times we need a little more info than what we may have in our heads or, quickly available to us. Now, the internet is wonderful and you can look things up, but, you know, I don't trust everything on the internet. A lot of it has not really been vetted, and where's the source of information to go to? Well, it's kind of what we did before the internet would be the library, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, we're talking our own, what would we call it, a bibliothèque hortium of sorts. These are horticultural books on the topic of horticulture and growing plants.
And the other point that I'd like to make is that it is so easy to go on the internet now and why buy a book, they say. Well, one of the issues is when someone is publishing a book, they need to do the research. What they're attaching their name to has validity. One of the issues that we've come across in the internet age is that people can fix what they put. So you may read something and then you can't figure out, then you realize that what you've said is either inarticulate or absolutely wrong information.
Yep.
You can go back in the website and fix it. In the books, you need to do extra special research before you print the thing.
That's true.
And so the quality of the information you get in most books, especially if they're attached to a university or a publishing house with credentials, you're going to be able to sort of trust the information you get.
Very true. Very true, Joe. And you know, the books themselves are going to be broken down into several different categories. There are going to be those books that are purely encyclopedic for, you know, researching a broad range of plants. You're going to have those books that are more technical, which can be used for keying out plants or having specific growing aspects. There are those books that are going to be genus-specific. So in one thought that comes to mind is roses. And one of my favorite books is by none other than our Joseph Truscott
Oh, my gosh.
Who knows what it means to be a published author and the hassles of putting that book together.
It was easy. The content of the information was easy. The hard part was hawking the book. and you get out there and, you know, you've just devoted a year and a half of your life putting something together, and people look at it, turn their nose up and said, oh, I use this other thing.
Well, the thing about your book, Joe, that is so important is that it is specific to our area, the Central Coast of California, and I can look up all kinds of roses in other books, and that doesn't mean that they are necessarily going to play here. Now, I know that it's been a few years since you wrote that thing, so when is the second edition coming
out? Oh, my gosh, don't put pressure on me. if I stop volunteering for six or seven different organizations, maybe I could focus on maybe making it an e-book and updating the content of the information, but well, it is kind of a slap on the back when you go onto Amazon and see the book being sold as a used book for three times what you had charged.
Yes.
So yes. Anyway, that's kind of a nice thing. But
so you know, when I jumped ahead, of course, and I jumped into a genus-specific type of publication. But let's start with those that are more plant info and reference. Now, I mentioned one a few minutes ago, which was like for keying out plants, and something like the Jepson Manual Vascular Plants of California is a tome. And it's not one of the books that I would recommend that the home gardener turn to right away when they're trying. It's much more technical. It almost needs a user manual. You need to. It's a book designed for, let's say you are a botanist or a botany major and you're out there and you find something, you don't know what it is, and you've got nobody to tell you what it is. And I'll tell you right away, I'm not a fan of these iPhone apps where you take a picture and it comes back with the best recommendation. Mm-hmm. It is great to know how to key out a plant by, what kind of leaf structure, the stems, how are the leaves set up, alternate, opposite, etc., the petals of the flowers, what clad is it in, etc., etc., etc. But it's very technical, and it's not a quick down and dirty. Another great tome is the Hortus series, and I have Hortus 3rd. I think it's probably up to Hortus 7 or 8 by now. But it's a huge encyclopedic tome, and again, it's not going to give you specifics on growing culture and that sort of thing. So there are a couple, and I know that Joe and I will share our sensibilities about some of these books. But Joe, why don't you start off with your favorite go-to Bible of plants, if you will?
Well, there are two.
Okay.
One of them, and this should be in anybody's garden, everybody's garden, the Western Garden Book. It is absolutely a fantastic encyclopedia, but it also classifies things based on the climate or microclimate that you have. For instance, here are perfect plants for hanging baskets and window boxes. Mm-hmm. Perfect plants that are for damp soil and ponds, tropical effects in plants. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it there's just a wealth of information, and I would recommend that you start shopping some of these book fairs, places like the Marina Public Library has a bookstore, and it's an absolutely huge collection of stuff. So not only would you get a copy of this for dirt cheap, but you're also going to support the library in its activity. So.
Now, I have to totally agree with Joe that the Sunset Western Garden Book, which is published by Sunset Publishing, they're headquartered up in Menlo Park, California, they've been producing this book, I think it's since the 50s, and they put out a new edition about every 7 or 8 years. And it is the Sunset Western Garden Book. Anywhere you are living in the Western United States, Southern California, Oregon, state of Washington, Alaska, Hawaii, and Western Nevada, I think even parts of Utah, are covered. They have a wonderful regional map, and from this book has come this whole designation of zones. And, we have USDA hardiness zones and then maps accordant with that. What Sunset did with their book is they became much more specific and in taking into account microclimates and came up with their own zone system, which is one I tend to more frequently use than the USDA when I'm determining what plants will be hardy and survivable in a specific area.
Yeah.
And all of the cultural information is there. How much light does it need? How much water does it need? Now, the only drawback that I have seen to the book is that it's not all comprehensive. There are genuses of plants that they will list, let's say, delphinium or something like that. And they're not going to have every single one that's there. If you really want to know that every single type of delphinium or every single type of geophyte tulip or something, you may need to source further. However, this is, as Joe said, a book that should be in everyone's home who is a gardener.
And they have also, glossary at the very end, you can look up common names. So If you know something as knotweed or chatterbox, you can look it up and maybe it will direct you to what the actual Latin name is, and you can go from there. But the Western Garden Book is truly a fantastic resource for anyone growing things along in California.
Mm-hmm. My pick after the Western Garden Book, Sunset Western Garden Book, is one that was produced by the East Bay Municipal Utility District, East Bay MUD. The first edition came out in the 90s, and it was a rather slim book, but it had a great way of defining plants that were suitable for summer dry climates or the Mediterranean type climate that we live in. And they since put out another edition, which is much bigger. It's called Plants and Landscapes for Summer Dry Climates of the San Francisco Bay Region, but it clearly and easily covers our region as well, here in Monterey County. And it is loaded with beautiful photographs of both. It denotes what are California native plants and those plants that are not. A lot of them obviously will originate from other Mediterranean climates around the world, whether South Africa or parts of South America, etc. And this is a book that is very, very handy, especially if you are looking for ideas about how to put plants together in combination within a landscape. Beautiful photography, and like the Sunset Western Garden Book, they have troubleshooting areas, whether it's a dry shade or wet shade or different types of soils. It's broken down by trees and shrubs and the perennials, the annuals, the grasses, etc. And it's just a stupendous book. I want to mention also that as we talk about all of these plants, talk about all these plant books, that if you would like to get a copy of our list, just send us an email or a text or something, and we will be happy to email you the list sometime after the show.
I think we can also, if you'll go ahead and post it on your Facebook page, I'll certainly share it around to my folks.
Great.
And if you're not following us on Facebook, we'd certainly recommend you do. And you can easily find me if you know how to spell my last name. It's TRUSKOT.
That's right.
And look me up, and we'll definitely send you a list of the books that we're talking about this morning.
That's right. And you can find me on Facebook also, Stephen E. Pop, but it would be easier for you to find my other page, which is Green Tiger Garden. Green Tiger Garden Facebook page. Okay, any other books you want to mention under the Plant Encyclopedia reference?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that question because I have another one here that I have. I bought it for $9.50 back in 1980-something or other, and it's called The Complete Handbook of Garden Plants by Michael Wright. And it was in the bargain bin of some place or other, and I have to say, it doesn't have any photographs, but it has very
nice renderings.
Articulate drawings, which are very close to what you want, and it truly covers, just as I'm flipping the pages, there are the cactus,
very nice.
There are the grasses, there are the who knows what, there are bulb plants. I just learned so much about all of this. There's a little section on roses. But the thing I like about this book, The Complete Handbook of Garden Plants by Michael Wright, the thing I liked about it the most is it gave a bunch of varieties. Now, one of the issues that we come about that we have to face with garden books is hybridists are introducing new and better plants and varieties, cultivars, every day. So in order to keep up, I mean, one of the issues I have with the book that I did in 2011 is that some of the roses that I mentioned in the book aren't available in commerce anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, good luck, folks. So you need to stay current. That's why if you get a good garden site on the internet, stick with it. I find that, you know, people boohoo Wikipedia because anybody can change it. On the other hand, because anybody can change it, it can be easily fixed.
Mm-hmm.
So please use the resources available to you. And that's my garden plant book.
I have another one in terms of the encyclopedia of plants, and this is an older book. It was published in 2000. I do think it is still in print. It's called Armitage's Garden Perennials, a Color Encyclopedia by Alan M. Armitage, A-R-M-I-T-A-G-E. This is a book written by a man who was one of the founders of the AFCFG, the Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers, which I used to belong to when I was a cut flower grower. And the plants in this book are not specific to California. They are national, back east and here. It's another wonderful book with lots of color. And what's important about it is that almost every plant in this book, they're all perennials, contain flowers that can be utilized for cut flower purposes. So if you are creating the cutting garden flowers in your garden, this is a wonderful plant to have. And again, plenty of cultural information included. That's Armitage's Garden Perennials, a Color Encyclopedia. What you got, Joe?
Oh, well, let's do we want to get into this? A couple of things. When I don't know what interested me in old roses, heirloom varieties of roses, but somehow it just clicked a button, whether or not it was because my childhood neighbor growing up in Ohio had quite a variety of roses that she was growing next door, and I remember the names and was intrigued by them. However, if what I found to be so instructive is a book called In Search of Lost Roses. It's written by a journalist named Thomas Christopher, and the issue is old garden roses, but it's got a wealth of information about cemeteries, about the practice of, for instance, where to find some of these lost roses that are out there. And one of the best places is in the poorer neighborhoods of the world, and what he discovered was that a lot of times fancy mansions and stuff would have a gardener, and the owners would pass on, and they'd decide they didn't want those roses anymore, or they didn't want these plants anymore, and so the house staff would just take them home.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look in the poorer neighborhoods, that's where they planted some of these old roses that were growing there that you can't find anymore because the people that they used to work for, didn't want them anymore, so they gave them away. And there's a just a totally interesting thing. At any rate, it's In Search of Lost Roses, has a lot of information about how people found some of these old varieties.
That sounds like a fun book.
And absolutely, again, it's by Thomas Christopher. It was written in 1989 or so, and I just found it a really great read. Something that if you're really looking for a book for your book club to read that's not a romance novel, it's got a different kind of search and find
story to it.
And I'm going to talk a little bit more about Old Roses in the next two books that I talk about.
Well, I wanted to mention also, in terms of the different types of books, one of the topics that we've often talked about here on the show is the practice of permaculture. And there are a lot of books on permaculture, whether it's no-till gardening or forest gardening or just the full aspect of it, Mollison's book being one of the first of them. But one of the more practical books that I have used for permaculture is called Gaia's Garden, A Guide to Home-Scale Permaculture by Toby Hemenway. Excellent book for the home permaculturalist of any size property, and it has all the techniques necessary to learn about sheet mulching, to learn about Heugelkultur, to learn about the concentric rings of a permaculture design aspect, water retention, all these different aspects. A great book to be using. If you have a bigger piece of property under the permaculture heading, Creating a Forest Garden, Working with Nature to Grow Edible Crops, by Martin Crawford. He's not the first to do a forest garden. There have been others before him, but his is very comprehensive. His own property is in the Devon and Cornwall area of Great Britain. And lastly, under the permaculture heading, I would recommend the book Growing Food in a Hotter, Drier Land, Lessons from Desert Farmers on Adapting to Climate Uncertainty by Gary Paul Nabon, who lives at the top of the Sonoran Desert in southern Arizona. He's an ethnobotanist. He's written many, many books of great value. And for this book, he traveled around both the U.S. and in places like Iran and Iraq and other parts of the Middle East, Yemen, and was examining how water was conserved, how growing practices were used to create oases in these very arid areas. And it's very applicable to the direction that we may be heading, are certainly heading, with hotter and drier landscapes, and how to continue to produce food and increase our food security.
Yeah, the I'm particularly interested in desert agriculture, and there's, you know, no reason why we shouldn't look at some of the traditional ways of getting water in the desert that still exist, because you know, with the how do I say, there are technologies available that are not dependent on oil and gasoline.
And he talks about some of the ancient technologies. I know you and I have talked about the cistern systems in Persia.
The Fanats.
The underground channels, and doing waffle gardens in Egypt, as well as terrace gardens. And those farmers in the southern areas of the United States, indigenous farmers, who are entirely dependent upon the monsoons to come in, to give enough moisture to get the squash and the corn and the maize going.
Right.
It's just a fascinating read, and it's very practical in terms of, I mean, you know, growing watermelons in the desert, well, it's doable with using olas, you know, the buried urns of terracotta filled with water.
Yeah.
So all kinds of fun stuff there.
Well, I mean, also desert cultures use terracotta for their water pitchers because they evaporate.
That's
and
it.
Cool. You want some cool water? Let nature do it for you,
and you can
without
use,
electricity.
You can use them for filtration as well. I mean, it's just so versatile. So versatile.
Yeah.
Well, we're just streaming through the time here, Joe. We're gonna take a short break. We will be back and talk about the rest of our favorite books. We're talking about horticulture, literacy and horticulture, and all kinds of fun things of that nature. So we'll be right back. And we are back. This is In the Garden. I'm Stephen E. Pop. I'm here with Joseph Truscott. And I just have to say it again. I love to say KSQT Prunedale.
All right.
Along with KSQT Santa Cruz, of course.
That's right.
90.7, 89.5, 89.7, and streaming live at KSQT.org.
We are your garden guys.
We are the
like it or not.
That's oh, don't tell us that. Yeah. So we're talking about interesting books on horticulture. And, you know, the other categories that exist that we haven't touched on yet. One is the book that isn't so much about this is a plant and it might go in your garden in this place or that place, but what about if you have all those packets of seeds that you ordered, you know, from the different seed companies in January and February, and there's very limited amount of information that's on that seed package. One of the ones that books that I used to use professionally as a cut flower grower, but it's perfectly adaptable to the home garden, is the Ball Culture Guide, the Encyclopedia of Seed Germination by Jim Now. And I have the third edition. There was a first and a second. And what's really nice about this book is that it's not just cut flowers. You've got bedding, florist foliage plants. You've got cut flowers. You have perennials. You've got annuals. You've got vegetables and herbs. And in each on each page, an individual plant is listed, or several plants are listed on each page, and it gives you, you know, what percentage of germination should you get, 80 to 90% or less, how many seed there are for 1,000 plants, number of seeds, germination temperatures in Fahrenheit and Celsius, what kind of lighting will you need, especially at planting time. Do you need to lightly cover the seed, cover the seed completely, don't cover it at all, how many days to germination, and then days to sowing to your transplant time, how many days will it be, what growing on temperatures in terms of Fahrenheit and Celsius, and crop time in weeks. So, you know, whether you were harvesting for yourself or commercially, it gives you all of this information. If you're growing in pots, how many plants per pot in a 4-inch or in a 10-centimeter plant? How many days to maturity? What kind of spacing will you use in the garden or in the greenhouse? So it's just a really, really comprehensive book for starting seeds. There are other books. One of my favorite for native California plants is by Dara E. Emery, and it's Seed Propagation of Native California Plants. It's just on native California plants. And then lastly, there's the book, there are many books, on propagation techniques, especially using cuttings, clones as they're often referred to. I use an old book called The Reference Manual of Woody Plant Propagation from Seed to Tissue Culture by Michael A. Durr and Charles W. Heuser Jr. And this is a book that it does not have every single plant that we may have here in California. A lot of them are East Coast and middle of the country species, but almost every genus is represented. So, you know, you can play over from that to those genus that, you know, the species of genus that we may have here that you're looking for. And again, it gives you what type of wood to use, you know, soft, semi-hard, hard wood, how much of an IBA or a rooting hormone should you use? What types of parts of the plants should you use? Tips, lateral stems, whatever, root cuttings, seed treatments, and more. So that's the reference manual of woody plant propagation. Those are the practical how-to down-to-earth books that I have used over the years.
And he's also talking about not 20 or so cuttings. I have a feeling Stephen was using it for greenhouses.
Oh, yeah.
20 or so greenhouses full of propagated
The plants. Smallest propagation greenhouse I ever worked in was 10,000 square feet. The largest was 44,000 square feet or an acre. But yeah, that's definitely, but it can be scaled down.
Yeah, that's definitely our message. I wanted to jump back into the topic of historical roses.
Oh, please do.
And one of the things that I found a challenge and an interest in was going back and finding some of the roses, not necessarily the oldest rose, because there was good information on that, but the sketchiest information was on roses from the 1930s till about the 1960s.
Is that just because people weren't writing about them? Or?
If they were included in something, there was very little information about them. Uh-huh. And that was at a time when the baby boomer parents were buying roses like crazy, and there was no record kept of them. Other than, you know, the latest Jackson and Perkins catalog would come out, and the next year wouldn't feature maybe a third of the year before. The information was gone very quickly.
Yes.
Finding these plants, you know, 40 years, 50 years later, how do you identify what that rose is that's growing?
Uh-huh.
And, you know,
I have a few that I'd like to know.
Yeah, exactly. How do you identify that? Well, I go back into buying books of that period and trying to
match it up.
Hone it down. But the photography stunk.
Yeah,
because
a lot of it's black
pictures
and white
in the 40s, it just didn't really help you
quality,
at all.
Yeah.
At any rate, let's go back to it. The best book on old roses is the Graham Stewart Thomas Rose Book.
Uh-huh.
It combines three of his previous publications, and he was very involved in old roses and the gardens in England. And much of the collection was stuff that he was dealing with on a daily basis in the professional gardens. So it lists all the various old garden varieties.
Mm.
In addition, there is Phillips and Rick's Random House Guide to Roses from about 1889. It probably has been done before, but the photography is spot on.
Oh, boy.
They're really good
pictures. Beautiful.
With the name. So in combination, the two books are a really great resource for the old roses. And just a plug on them is there's a terrific number of roses that you can grow that are disease-free. That's right, folks.
Wow.
Disease-free, ever-blooming roses right here. So look for them. Okay.
Wonderful, wonderful. One of the it's a publication. It was put out by the Florists Publishing Company, 111 North Canal Street, Chicago, Illinois. It's called the New Pronouncing Dictionary of Plant Names. And this is one of the places I can get myself into trouble.
Hookera.
In a hurdy.
Hoochera.
Oh, Hoochera.
Kalochi.
Calacunzi. Kalawawa. Yeah, and so what this book is, it is a dictionary of plant names from A to Z, and it even has a key to pronunciation with the, you know, here's an A as in fat, here's an A as in fate, here's an A as in far, here's an A as in fall, here's an A as in fair, A as in Persia. I mean, there's, you know, five different ways of pronouncing the A, and it takes the name of the plant, and, you know, so Campanula, well, here it is, Campanula, bellflower, Canterbury Bells, Campanula, and it has saved my rear
end. I thought
it
was Campanula.
You can do it as you wish, Campanula, or is it Campanula? No, it's not. You are right. It is Campanula. So, Cordeline is actually Cordellini.
Yeah.
This is one of those things that.
Pipeline is also Pipeline.
Pipeline, that's right. And if you don't want to sound like an idiot like me, get this new pronunciation dictionary, which is not so new anymore. I think I actually first picked up my first copy at the little gift bookstore at Filoli. and then I had to have it enlarged so that I could read it with my poor old eyes. Now, there are specific categories of books that play on a specific genus of plants. I won't get into too much of it right now. We've been talking about roses, which is great, but there are books on salvias. There are books on ceanothus. There are books on mushrooms. Mushrooms Demystified, David Arora, The Mushroom Cultivator, A Practical Guide to Growing Mushrooms at Home by Paul Stamets and J.S. Chilton. There are books on grasses. There are books on carnivorous plants. By the way, salvias, which are very, very popular, if you want what I think is the best book on salvias, it's the new book of salvias, Sages for Every Garden by Betsy Klevish. Mm-hmm. Beautiful photographs, and it has some of the, how shall I say, less common salvias. Mm-hmm. It's not just California.
Right, right, right.
So lots to look at there. But then the last category of books that I was going to mention. Oh, I didn't mention medicinals. Okay, Medicinal Plants of the Pacific West, Michael Moore. Growing at Risk, Medicinal Herbs, Cultivation, Conservation, and Ecology by Rico Check. Those are my two go-tos there. But there's this whole category of books that are similar to the book that Joe was talking about earlier about the roses. And these are books that are on horticulture, but they're also on the people and stories behind horticulture. The One Straw Revolution, Masanobu Fukuoka, is a classic. I think it's out of print. The Private Life of Plants, Sir David Attenborough, fascinating book. Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teachings of Plants by Robin Wall Kimmerer is an absolute journey in ethnobotany and plants. Oaxaca Journal, Oliver Sacks. Gardening at the Dragon's Gate, A Work in the Wild and Cultivated World by Wendy Johnson. She was the head gardener at the Green Gulch Zen Center in Marin County. She still writes one of the oldest, longest-running garden columns in Tricycle magazine. The Triumph of Seeds. It looks like it just says seeds but on the title, but it's The Triumph of Seeds, How Grains, Nuts, Cereals, Pulses, and Pips Conquered the Plant Kingdom and Shaped Human History by Thor Hansen. Another book by Gary Paul Nabon, Cumin, Camels, and Caravans, A Spice Odyssey. And then my absolute favorite is called The Plant Hunters, 200 Years of Adventure and Discovery Around the World by Toby Musgrave, Chris Gardner, and Will Musgrave. This follows the lives of Sir Joseph Banks, Francis Mason, David Douglas, Sir Joseph Dalton Hooker, Robert Fortune, Ernst Wilson, George Forrest, and Frank Kingdom Ward. And if any of those sound familiar to you, think of the names attached to plants like Banksii, Douglasii, Hookerii, Fortunii, Forestii, etc. This book, it has the adventures of these individuals who are out there collecting plants around the world and the adventures they had, which are comparable to anything you would ever see in an Indiana Jones movie. They're fighting pirates. they're being chased by warlords. Absolutely fascinating true stories.
Yep. And the Orchid book, what is it? Tip of my mind, I can't think of it. They're hunting the wild orchids.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, exactly. The same sort of adventures that
really,
can be had.
Really, really interesting stuff. I do want to spend 3 minutes talking about indoor plants.
Let's.
Partly because I got a book called Crockett's Indoor Garden, and Crockett.
I've heard of that.
James Crockett ran the Victory Garden thing. James Crockett was to gardening and plants what Julia Child was to cooking.
I remember.
And they're about the same period, but if you can find any of his stuff, he had a wonderful way of talking about everything that you need to know about growing plants in your house or out in the Victory Garden. The indoor garden was his stepping there. But there are also other books. Don't live without plants. That's the message, folks. There's so many different things out there. We say you can eat them, you can enjoy the flowers, you can enjoy the amount of carbon dioxide that they take out of your house and give you the gift of oxygen. And hey, these days I need as much oxygen as I can get.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right about all of that. And there are even books that are specifically talking about those plants that purify the air.
Absolutely.
50 plants to purify. So the aspect of gardening and gardeners and plants, I mean, we joke about it a lot about how, oh, you can never have too many plants and I always want more. Well, I've kind of gone to the stage of I can't have too many books on gardening and on plants. I don't have to water the book. I don't have to plant the book. I can live my garden vicariously through the books, and I learn a lot, and it's wonderful to be able to share that information.
And also, you know, I've just developed a lasting relationship with these books.
Oh, man. Well,
they're inanimate objects, but, you know, you start looking through that and say, oh, I remember when I grew that plant. I remember when I killed that plant. When I couldn't get rid of that. I remember that when the plant got so big, I donated it to the local swimming pool for their lobby. Just a perfect environment for houseplants. Anyway, it's been great fun.
To put a final wrap on it, then I think that you know, we have talked about we've scratched the surface here, the tip of the iceberg in terms of the numbers of publications, but probably given the fact that the cover and back cover jacket of my Sunset Western Garden book are missing, and every other piece of it is dog-eared, it is definitely, it is the book you should, if you live in California, it is the book you should not be without if you are a gardener.
And a few things. What are you doing in your garden? What are you right now doing right now?
What am I doing? I am cultivating and getting my vegetable Heugel in full production now. My corn, I have the first set is about waist high. I have two more sets going in. I have cucumbers just recently planted, summer squash recently planted. I have scarlet runner beans climbing the poles. I have lettuce ready to harvest. My tomatoes are finally setting, and I am seeding right now for fall crops.
Stephen has given me permission to open up the purchased but unopened seed packets that are sitting on my counter and planting them this weekend.
Yes.
It's not too late, folks. Get out there and plant your
seeds. I just got my first set of potatoes in for the year. You know, here I'm the potato guy, and I hadn't planted yet. Well, I will be planting potatoes up until November or December. The only month I don't plant is the end of December and January. Just, you know, you're not gonna be successful growing a tomato from seed right now, but you might get off doing a start. So
one of the things we can take advantage of, it's cool weather now because we have cool summers. So Put your seeds in the ground, and when the sun kicks in the middle of September and October heat arrives, they will be well established, and you will have beautiful flowers at Thanksgiving, too.
You will be a happy, happy gardener. And I am happy to be here with all of you today. Thank you so much for listening and tuning in. We will be back next week. Stay tuned now. Coming up next is the Dream Journal with Catherine Bell, and I hope that until next week, you all are happy gardeners. Happy gardening, and thank you for listening.